but God's journey that he took Israel on to get to the promised land and then take them out of the promised land, there was a reason for that, and it was for his glory, for him to be known to the nations and to the peoples of the world. It wasn't so that Israel could have a comfortable place to live, although that was a blessing he had in mind for them, but it wasn't because he wanted them to be physically comfortable that he gave them the promised land. It was because he wanted to use this people to show himself to the rest of the nations. And so we take that, and we take that application in a spiritual and internal application. He wants our internal promised land to bear fruit.
Hello again, and thanks for joining us today as we study with friends. We are in part two of our introduction of a multi-part series on the Pentateuch and the unifying themes that run through the Old Testament right on to the New. We hope this series will be an encouragement to you and will help you better understand God's plan to us from the beginning to the end. If you've missed any part of this series or you would like the homework, you can find it at our website, studywithfriends.org. You can also listen to us on any of your favorite streaming devices like iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher. Let's continue in God's Word.
Let's go ahead and move into the three elements, which Carol already teased out. The three elements in every covenant are land, descendants, or sometimes it's called seed, and a special relationship with Yahweh, God, you know, the God of Israel. So land, we'll abbreviate it by saying land, descendants, and relationship. So when we say relationship, we're talking about this between Israel and her God, this vertical, horizontal is the other way. So land, seed, and relationship. So this is where you guys are going to have to start saying some words. Okay, so the first thing I wanted to do before we get into Genesis and really see all the examples is set a framework for our personal application so that we can return back. That's a touchstone for us as we go into these sometimes, you know, crazy examples of land, seed, and relationships. So I think especially because it's the Old Testament, I don't know, I guess a lot of us find the New Testament easier to put into personal context. So I thought it would be appropriate for us to do this personal stuff first. And that way we have sort of a framework, like I said, a touchstone for what do these things really mean? And as you said, why did they matter so much between God and his people in the Old and New Testament? So I think that a great way to do that is to think about why would these things mean anything to us right now? So the first question in the homework that I asked you guys to think about was, what are your reflections, you know, just on the surface of the word land or the biblical promised land? And really don't overthink it. Like, what do you think of when you think of promised land?
Yes.
Jump in.
All right. So, for me, unfortunately, my first thought, because so I didn't become a believer until I was an adult. So these like ideas and concepts of promised land is like just this outrageously outlandish concept. So it wasn't really a personal reflection for me. So it wasn't like I thought of, oh, this beautiful area or this like town, like it just, it seems like a theme park kind of thing. So which is probably a little maybe different than what you, but that's what I think of when I think of the promised land. Like, that's what I think of. I think of these crazy stories like Noah and being swallowed by a whale and being, you know, like all these kind of things. And so when I think of promised land, it's sort of that same thing for me.
Somehow out there.
Yeah. It's just an out there concept. It's not this really deep and which of course, if I sit and I think about it, obviously it really very much is, because we're being promised land forever, but when I just sit and think of like the idea of the promised land, it just seems weirdly hokey and
disconnected.
Yeah,
from your
really disconnected. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, that's good. Thanks for being honest about that. How about you?
I guess I thought a couple of things, that it's like this physical space on the planet, like from this river to the ocean and from here to here, and like it's like this very specific land,
geography
of it. And that you know, when the Hebrews left Egypt, it took them like 40 years to get there, you know. It just that always has struck me as crazy. And even today, like the land of Israel has been battled over more than like any piece of earth ever, like, because it's special. Like, God made that little piece of, like, it's like the size of New Jersey. It's like this little piece of land, and yet it's so important. I also had the thought they had to fight for it just from having taught Sunday school a lot of years. Like, there were tons of people groups living there when, you know, Moses got them right to the edge and, you know, they came over. They had to fight it out and battle to get it eventually. And that many never saw it. Moses never went to the promised land after all that because of sin and doubt and other things. So God was very specific, like who he would allow to move into it as well as who he promised it to. So
those are great observations. Yeah. Yeah. We're all looking at you now. I'm so sorry. We all like swiveled our head to you. That was a lot of pressure.
Yeah,
sorry.
It's, I mean, shout out to my parents because they really made sure that I like knew biblical truths and stuff. Cause in my head, I've always seen the promised land as Israel and the whole land surrounding it that they were going after in Exodus, like you mentioned, and the stress of being out in the wilderness for 40 years and getting there, but then getting sent in exile. And I guess it was kind of in the back of my head, but because, as is kind of like the plague of people raised Christian often, it kind of just becomes dull as you grow older, and it's just kind of there, and it doesn't have a weight because you're like used to that knowledge. But I guess like being in college, because if you're looking for like the symbolic, like personal application of stuff like this, I guess like being in college kind of taught me more about what it must have been like as someone just like wandering in the desert or trying to be, trying to get out of exile to what was promised. Because a lot of us, as time went on, would look at graduation as like the promised land.
Oh,
like,
my, gosh, that's a great application.
Get me there. And then, of course, I mean, this year and perhaps this coming year, knock on wood, please know, it is like different. You know, it's not, it wasn't what we thought, but we still got it. But now me and a bunch of people that I know that graduated or are about to are kind of like, that's not it. Now, like, we have this whole other thing, and it probably, however real it was looking at it that way, it's even more real in my head now because I'm like, well, it's not kind of laid out for me anymore. Like, when you go to school, it's like you got elementary school laid out, then you have middle school, and then you have high school laid out.
Definite path. That you're,
exactly. Yeah. And when you're in college, you have the 4 years laid out ahead of you before that. But then after, even if you know the field that you're going into, there's like, I don't know what's going on. Like, I could do grad school. I could get a job. I could get married. I could go here. I could go to one of 49 other states. I have no idea. And so I think I and a bunch of other people are kind of feeling really between a lot of stuff. We kind of feel like, I don't know what's going on. I feel like I'm in maybe like the 30th year of my exile in the wilderness right now. And I'm not really sure. I don't have, you know, I don't have Google Maps. Like,
okay, you definitely have to come back for the exile part of this series because it sounds like it's very personally. Yeah, I get.
Trying. I feel like I'm stretching it. So
no, I don't think you're stretching it at all. I think that you're spot on, Bella, because you may have jumped ahead a little.
Oh, dang, really?
That's okay because because I think you're anticipating what we really do want to understand, which is, are we thinking about our promised land as something out there that happens to us or that we have to get to, or are we understanding it in the context of, are we already there?
Yeah.
Promises that God has made and that we can rest in. And so we're going to, and maybe we'll unpack that in a way that helps you think differently about it. That would be great. Or, you know, maybe you're just perfect the way that you are.
Like, why is it so nondescript and should it be less nondescript? Which is
in the Old Testament or in your life?
There's a parallel. I think in my life, it feels super nondescript. I feel like it probably shouldn't be. In the Bible, it probably shouldn't feel very nondescript either. So,
well, I might have some thoughts about that.
Okay. I can't read your mind.
Let's wait. I don't want to get there
so
too fast.
As a New Testament believer, I don't think we have the tie to a physical land like the Old Testament Jews did. Our land is heaven or salvation or, you know, but like Jews today, I mean, the whole movement of Zionism is they are physically moving to Israel. You know, they they are still awaiting their Messiah, right? So that land is still a very physical place. As a New Testament believer, I think the land is not the physical country of Israel. It's all the
spiritual context. Yeah. So we'll do that. Yeah. We'll do that together. Let's take our time and chew on it a little. So one of the next questions is just sort of taking our pace here. If you, let's just say, I don't know if I asked this question well. What I was driving at was, what if someone, maybe I should have asked, what if someone just gave you a house? That would have been a better question. What I asked in the homework was, what if someone gave you a piece of land? And I'm not sure that is as impactful than if I said, what if someone gave you a house? That would feel significant. Especially if you were homeless, right? If you had you were a person with no home and then someone just gave you a home, I think maybe that's more impactful to where I'm trying to make this more relatable. I don't know if we can even imagine. What I can apply it to is when we got our first house, which I'm in, you're sitting in right now, because we're like for one and done. Mm-hmm. I remember getting our first apartment, that feeling of like, I belong someplace. And definitely here, you know, when we got this house, I belong someplace, which leads into really the next question, so we can sort of mash them up, which was just, if we change the word land to home, and I just said house, but let's use the word home. How do you feel about the concept of home, and describe your feelings about home, the word home?
Yeah, I had answered about the land. I thought, yeah, you have that. It's a lot of responsibility. Like, you have to take care of it. You have to mow it, rake it, which is what I spent all the last week doing. You have to pay taxes. Like, there's management to take care of land. I was thinking more like farmland, maybe more than just property generically. But when you add the concept of home to it, it puts a much more positive spin on it for me. Like, that if you have a home, that's a safe place. It's somewhere to go. Especially during COVID, it's like we're all thankful we actually have a mm-hmm. home to sequester in, you know, that's that can keep us safer, you know. And then you're hopefully have that concept of like, you can just be yourself, you can be comfortable there, you can be in your pajamas all day, whatever.
Okay, good. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Other reflections about home.
So my personal reflection, and I actually didn't write this down, I sort of went a different way, but my personal reflection about my home, as you were sort of restating the question, my home, a piece of my home was gifted through my wedding. So we had a wedding gift that was large enough that we were able to help us put a down payment on the home. So it was through my parents. So part of that home, and for those of you who don't know me super well, I live two blocks away from my sister and her family, and I live two blocks away from my parents. So home and family are sort of all really intertwined really deeply. So part of this home that we live in and that we've grown a family in was gifted through my parents. And so even to think about that now and to think about like what a beautiful gift that was given at the time when we were young and we, you know, you're right, getting your first home, because we were in an apartment also, and how exciting to get our first home, and our family starts to build in this home. And so it does change the perspective of what a home here looks like, you know, in our quote unquote temporary home that we're here. And just that connection to family, and then how that relates to God, right? Because our father, I mean, really, the blessing all really came from our big father, right? Like from God the Father, he was able to give us this, you know, financial place where we could buy the home. And so even settling in our home every day just gives us a comfort, knowing that it was a gift.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good framing. That's really good context. And I'm sure you guys know I'm leading us to try to, you know, relate this to the Israelites. I'm wondering what your reflections are on home, having spent time away from home at college and then coming back. Do you have some perspective that you didn't have before you left?
I could probably teach a semester class on that. That's so much. I don't know. It's, I guess, like, the short, I was trying to think it over in my head because it's just so much. But it's, like, I don't know, like, grew up, really. I feel like you could probably feel the terrified opening up energy radiating out of me because I'm just so reserved, so homebody, like, not just, yeah, it's, I'm in my head. And so, like, going to college was, like, I had never gone. It was, like, to go to someone's house that wasn't a family member's for more than two nights was like a massive adventure. And it was like I quickly folded under the social pressure. And I was in like one room and then I had my own the next year. And then I had a house with two roommates, like a townhome for 2 years. And being such a homebody who hates change and like I just need to live, you know, I lived in the same little house with my sweet little family from you know,
and your two cats
and my two kids, my cats for my whole life. That was always my safe spot. Like I felt like I lost a spot, you know, a piece of home in my heart when my grandparents got rid of their house to move back, which my mom might have talked about before here because we all felt the same way. And then in college, it was like that. But the past 2 years, mostly this one, I've been really, like, God's really been challenging me with almost, like, an idea, like, we're talking about now. It's, like, there's one of my favorite songs has this line that says, I'm not home till heaven opens. And, like, there's this idea of, like, and the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. And, like, after being really called into ministry, like, full-time, I'm kind of, like, I, like, want a home, and, like, I know I love my home, and I would go home every weekend for a while in my first 2 years of college, and I really deeply yearn for my own family, my own home one day. But at the same time, I'm, like, really being challenged by, like, I'm kind of, I feel like I'm up and going in the middle of two things. I'm living at my old house, but I'm, like, that's not where I'm supposed to be right now, I think, or soon, and my brain is kind of like all over the place when.
So
you
the definition of home.
Mm-hmm. It's like I don't.
So
even
this
know
is
what it
really
is anymore,
relevant
yeah.
to you right now.
Well,
that
I guess, yeah,
to
yeah.
to figure out how we define home and where we belong and yeah,
it's
I feel like that. Yeah, I feel like that. You're really in the middle of that right now.
Yeah, it's very like.
But which is total, by the way, which
yeah.
is totally normal for your age.
Well, yeah.
Like I think we all went through that. When I graduated from college, I was in. Wait, was I engaged by then? Was I engaged by then? He's behind the camera. Yes, we were engaged by then.
I don't know.
So I guess I had I knew where I was going, but still, you feel that disorientation of like what is the future hold? Uh-huh. There's something about the your defined life before college.
Yeah.
You kind of like it's set for you. You said it earlier. There's a path, and you kind of just stay on it and yeah. do the thing and. After college, the path is less clear.
Yeah, it's like I want to be cemented, but I don't know if God wants me to be cemented now mm-hmm. or like yet.
Well, I keep wanting. I'm just going to give the cheat sheet. He wants you to be cemented in Him.
Well, yeah.
That's the home. That's the promised land. Mm-hmm. Yep. That wherever you go, you take that with you. It's on the inside. Easier. I mean, I've just said that to you in a very trite way. It's very hard to accomplish that yeah. in yeah. spiritual peace. So don't think that
yeah.
just because I said it in a simple way, it's simple to do.
No.
But that's, you know, that's the idea.
That is what we do, right, is we even now, even talking about it here and me sort of reminiscing on the comfort of my home, we forget that we're not supposed to be 100% comfortable mm-hmm. here even, right? So because this isn't our
home. It's a great point.
Yeah. So, but there is such a sense of comfort and peace. And I remember you're telling the story, and I remember moving into the new home and just thinking, like, how can I sleep into this new home? Like, because you get used to the other home that you
mm-hmm.
were in.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is something to be said about God does not necessarily want us to be completely
comfortable.
Yeah, that's what that
in this home.
That's what that lyric challenged me with. Because yeah. like, if I'm not home until heaven opens, i.e., I'm not home until I'm like joined with the Lord, yeah. then that's
yeah.
like
I keep. Who said it? This is a quote I've said so many times, and for whatever reason today it's escaping me. It'll come to me, but. It's an old, like, a long time ago guy who said, our hearts are restless until they find rest in you.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, I can't think of who that is. I want to say, is it Augustine? But I think
probably.
It's, I don't know if it's Augustine or if it's the other A guy whose name it's probably the other A guy whose name I can't think of.
Aquinas.
It might have been, yes, that's the other A guy. Good job. Star for you. Thank you. My old brain needs help from your young brain. Okay. So actually, one of the things that you said, Kathy, about your parents is really great lead into the next question, because I was asking if you had thoughts about God's demonstrated love for his people and for us through the promise of land or home or a home. And I think we've skirted around that a little bit, but can you put a finer point on what you think I'm driving at in that question? Any of you? Jump in. You don't need my permission.
I just thought, every time I think about the promised land, I think of that it's flowing with milk and honey. Mm-hmm. And that's the phrase is always said. And what does that mean? That there's, your needs will be met there. There's food there for you. It's safe, or it will be. So.
Mm-hmm. So sufficiency.
Yeah, provision.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is a good time to take a beat and make sure that we're clear that we're not preaching the prosperity gospel. Because what we're not saying is that if you believe hard enough in God, you're going to have financial blessings and physical manifestation of his love. It doesn't mean that a third world mom who's, you know, living in a hut is any less a recipient of God's grace and salvation and all of his spiritual blessings than someone who lives in a first world country like the U.S., even in the most poverty-stricken areas of our first world country. It looks very different than a third world country. And I think it's Jen Hatmaker who really said something that I loved, which was, and if I'm quoting the wrong person, I'll try to fix that too. But she said, if it's not, when you think about biblical truth, if it's not true for a single mom in a third world country, it's not true. Because God's blessings aren't just for first world America. So we should be cautious about applying promised land to some prosperity gospel. So we reject that. Handedly.
I'm so thankful for how God invites us to know him through his word, and that that word continues to change us to look more like Jesus. We hope that this has been a gift to you too. We are a weekly Bible study just like you find in a local church. If you aren't involved in a study like this, we encourage you to find one and make sure the church is teaching the Bible every week and in every situation. In Matthew 10, Jesus sent out his disciples to preach the word. He instructed them with this command, "Freely you have received, freely give." We believe that applies to us here at Study with Friends. So we've created many resources for you on our website, studywithfriends.org. They are all free for you to use and share, and hopefully these will bless and encourage you on your walk with Jesus. Just like those disciples who relied on others for support, we are also 100% donor-supported. If you have been particularly blessed by any of our resources, please consider a donation of any amount. A monthly partnership is especially helpful to us, and no amount is too small. If you are moved to give it, we would be grateful and blessed to have it. You can donate on our website at studywithfriends.org/donate. Whether it's your first time listening or you've been here from the beginning, we would love to hear from you. You can email us to say hello, ask for prayer requests, or just give encouragement at info@studywithfriends.org. Hearing from you really does encourage and move us. To stay connected, you can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. We'll see you next time when we study with friends.